Hello? Oh no, she's dead.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
It's all shits and giggles till somebody dies.
Hey.
Remix.
We're back. Another week of Death, a Funny Business.
Welcome, everybody.
My
mum's dead and so is her dad. It's 5 o'clock on a Tuesday, which means it's time to talk about your inside feelings.
How are your inside feelings?
So great. Love my inside feelings. I've been really fucking around with my antidepressants, which you really shouldn't do. You should take them regularly on time. And honestly, it's bad.
What's been happening?
No, it's fine. I'm fine. It's just like, I know I'm playing fast and loose and at some point I'm going to like, I don't know, crash or something. But it's all good. Basically, I realized I was going to run out before my pharmacist can get my drugs. So I was like, I'm going to do one every other day for 2 days.
Okay.
But it's okay. So that's fine.
What? I'm worried about you.
No, all
okay,
is well.
She's all right, everyone.
Just don't do it. It's just an emergency scenario.
No.
Anyone who's taking
it. Stupid.
Don't do it. You'll get the tremors and the shakes and you shouldn't do that.
Today?
We're both wearing very fancy shirts.
Oh, today. Yeah, I was going to say today I feel like shit.
Why?
I'm really tired.
Yes.
And I have a sty in my eye.
Goodness me.
And I have no makeup on.
You need to do a little eye bath when you get home.
I've been putting compresses on my
eyes.
Yeah,
hot little compress.
Yeah.
Hot little compress.
Well, they get cold quite quickly. So I'm grieving my eye.
Your little, a nice, healthy eye. Becky would like a nice, healthy eyes back.
I'm grieving my youth at the moment.
Oh, okay. Before we tell people.
I know,
let's,
I keep doing this.
No, this is my fault. I started asking you about
don't
things.
Fucking ask me, Tash.
No, do you want to tell the people who we have today?
Yeah, we got Megan. We've got Megan Riordan-Jarvis. She is joining us later on in the show. She is a trauma-trained psychotherapist, grief educator, and author. So we're going to find a lot about her books and also dive into PTSD, which is something that we
very
haven't really talked that much about.
Yes, I think it's very fascinating. And I feel like she could offer some insight into lots of bits and bobs.
And questions about, essential questions about grief and loss.
I would agree with that too. Right. Anyway, should we go? Let's talk about you grieving your youth.
Let's talk about me, Tash.
Have you just feel like it's caught up with you? Is this what's happening? You feel 25. We're not 18 anymore, Becky. We can't party like we're 18.
I'm 26.
Oh, God, you are. Becky turned 26.
I think that I have just done a lot of adulting recently.
Mm.
And we've talked about this before, but I felt like, you know, I had to kind of grow up, you know, not as fast as you did. You lost your mum a lot younger.
It's all relative, okay?
It's relative,
it's kids. Look, guys, it's not a competition, all right? I know that I've been doing this for a while. I was only 7.
Tash,
but it's all relative.
You win. You win the death contest.
Yay! Okay, tell us about feeling like your youth.
But I feel like it was a lot of growing up quickly.
Yep.
And then I kind of got to live my youth in London, which was great fun. Partying.
Yeah.
Woo, woo, woo.
Woo, woo, woo.
You know, doing lots of things I shouldn't be doing in all the right ways.
Did you go? You went to uni?
I went to uni.
Oh, yeah, you did.
But I didn't really live the uni life because I was still kind of in grief.
Yeah.
And it was just not really.
There was a lot going on.
Yeah, a lot going on. So London for me was let's party and let's be youthful. So I had a great few years, right?
Yeah, 1,000%.
But then I had to move and I just feel like an adult doing all the boring shit of like actually moving boxes and having to sort out bills and having to sort out life admin.
This is interesting.
And I just feel like exhausted.
Yeah.
And I just think sometimes I'm like, oh, I just wish that I could ask my dad to come around and, you know, help me with the boxes or give me some advice on where to move to or those kind of things. And I think that it's the combination of missing him and his input into my adulthood alongside just that it's really exhausting.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair enough. Becky.
So that's probably where my style comes from.
Fair enough. You've also like had to move back because of dad stuff and all of this malarkey. So like that's also going to have its like own trials and tribulations of feelings and what have you. So again, I think it's okay.
Like, oh, it's so fine. I just thought I'd be honest about it.
I just want to like, I just want to like scream a little bit. It's fine. A little bit. Just want to scream into a hole like for the rest of the day.
I just thought I'd be honest about it.
No,
because I thought I'm going to come on here and be all smiley, and I am smiley. I'm actually fine.
Of course you are.
But I just thought I'd come on here and be honest about
1,000% as you should
about
be.
My week. How about you?
How about me? Lot of complex feelings around internalized homophobia this week.
Okay.
Deep. Okay, as a pansexual, bisexual, whatever you want to call me, queer lady who likes to date the male sex and the female sex and anyone else in between. Sometimes when I've been dating boys for a bit and then I date girls, I get this weird little thing where I almost like, I can feel it happening where I'm like, and I've been talking about this in therapy. It's all good. It's just a really complex thing. When I'm with a boy, I want to be with a girl. When I'm with a girl, I want to be with a boy. It's bad. Okay?
Can I
tell you what it is?
Yeah,
and then,
tell me.
Specifically when I'm with a girl, I get this thing where I'm like, well, somehow I've lost. And I've been talking about it a lot in therapy, and it's fucked up, but it's genuinely the patriarchy. It's genuinely the patriarchy. It's like the patriarchy that's told me my whole life I need a husband. When I had my husband, thank you, Ray. Been dancing to that all week. I'm not going to lie. That is also part of the problem. I actually think she's creating a patriarchal stereotype in my head. No, I'm not.
It's probably because you've been listening to it so much.
I've been listening to it on the radio. And also as well, like people have said to me, like mates at work have been like, if there was ever a song that encompassed you, it would be that song, which I am not taking as a compliment. But I do. I talk about, like, where the fuck is my husband? Like, why am I... Where is he?
But you've always done that. I'm ready for love. I want to meet my husband.
I know, but then I'm also, like, very open to being with women. My greatest love was women. Yeah, if you're listening, you know who you are. Well done. Big snaps for ex-girlfriend. Good job. Greatest love was with a girl. Like, the whole vibe. Like, 1,000% have been, like, totally down to marry a lady. But in the beginnings of, like, dating a girl, which I am kind of slightly, just a couple of dates.
Okay. This is new.
She doesn't know her podcast, so this is great. We can tell us. Kissed a girl.
Oh!
Kissed a girl.
I thought you were seeing someone else. This is all new to me.
Yeah, I was. And then he fucked off. And then now I'm like back in the game. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, all of it's very fresh. It's very new. I'm just exploring. I'm 25. I'm living my life.
You're allowed to be doing all of that shit.
Yeah, and she's really, really lovely. But the moment I was like, we had, honestly, probably best date ever. She paid the bill. Little cheeky minx.
What did you do? What was the date?
We went for dinner and drinks. And then I went to the toilet. I came back. And I was like, should we go? And she was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I was like, oh, shit, we need to pay. And she was like, no, no. I've dealt with her. I've done it.
Oh,
and so I was like, oh, okay. Treat me like a lady.
And
you know what I mean?
Did you tell her that your mum's dead?
Do you know what's crazy? Not in the way that I usually do. I told her because I was like, she was asking about like family. Yeah. I didn't go, well, funny story, my mum died. Yeah. I just went, it's just me, my sister, my dad, and whatever. Which actually, because we were just talking about crazy shit, we had like long ass chat. But, you know, it's interesting. But genuinely, like, it's a weird thing. Like, and my therapist said it's quite common in people who date both genders. It can be like quite, or like all genders, it can be quite, it can be quite confusing sometimes, like where you kind of go like, oh, like all of a sudden, like you start doubting whether you kind of compare them to the rest of the species. So like when I date a boy, I'm like, they encompass all boys. And when I date a girl, they encompass all women. So like, I feel like, but then actually what you need to do is kind of switch off that part of your brain that's telling you that they're all the same and be like, no, we have to see them as individuals. So I'm very excited. We're going on a date tomorrow. I'll keep you guys updated. It'll be lovely.
So you've had a great week.
I've had a good week. I mean, not going to lie, the beginning of the week started with me being all like mopey about boys and hating life and being like, I'm really me alone forever and I hate him and he's such a dickhead and where, even though he's not that much of a
griefy week.
No, not grief, just more like, you know, figuring shit out. Mm. You know what I'm saying? I mean, always mother, what would you think, mummy? Mm. But she's not around, so can't
would
ask
she,
her.
Like, what would she think or say? Do
well,
you know?
Fuck knows. I've no clue if she'd even be like super uncomfortable with being gay.
But do you never think that you could just kind of like make it up? Like if, you're not, if you're not unsure about something, you could be like, I have a feeling my mum would love this.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know. I know that my mum was incredibly opinionated, so I'm sure she would have had an opinion about it. But then my dad has like almost zero opinions about anything in a way a lot of the time. So it's hard to know. It's hard to know.
But I think we can start using this as an excuse.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, what? I can't.
I'm pretty sure my dad would think this is super cool.
Okay.
Getting fucked at the weekend, you know? And then...
Yeah, okay.
It's fine, because daddy said it was fine.
Oh, daddy said it was fine? No, daddy issues here at all.
I keep making jokes at the moment about my dad's... So I'm staying in his flat, where he was supposed to move into before he died. Mm. And I keep, like, my boyfriend and I keep joking about how
my friend
how my dad's just lingering about like a ghost.
Yeah. Did he ever live there?
No.
Oh, he didn't.
He never lived there, but he was like planning on moving there.
Oh,
so he was like doing the flat up, and then we had to, when he died.
Oh fuck.
We all had to do the flat up, so that's why
that makes a lot of sense. You kind of got lumped in a way with the flat.
Yeah, we got lumped with the flat, which is great.
Yeah, but amazing.
It was also,
but also
like all these memories, like I had my room, Oscar had his room,
and
because my parents
are
separating, so it was like a new chapter that never got to happen.
Fuck, so I Becky. Guess... No, let's talk about that. That's messed up, man. That's rough.
Yeah, I think that's probably why I was a bit anxious about moving there, because I thought, okay, so I'm moving to these memories that haven't happened, but they've happened in my brain. Like, I was so sure I could visualize my life there with my dad and my brother, and it was going to be a lot of change, and that was difficult in itself, dealing with divorce, right?
I mean that's 1,000% grief. That's like its parents. Own situation.
And then he kind of like, I think I was driving him back and forth from the flat and then to hospital appointments, and it was all kind of happening at once. But for him, this flat was like the light at the end of the tunnel. It was a focus that, you know, it gave him purpose to kind of continue. And then he fucking died, so he never got to live there, which was sad. But
oh, Becky,
I'm there, so that's what I mean. He's sort of just hanging about. He's the ghost I can chat to in the night.
Yeah, for sure. I'm scared. I feel like these are very, very heavy, real feelings. I feel like they are. It's very real. Like, this is very raw, and like, it makes a lot of sense that you're feeling all kinds of feelings, because it's not just a scenario where it's as simple as like, they died, I got a home or whatever. It's not the same, especially if you were like driving him to and forth.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely very involved in it. And I think also what people don't realise is that what comes with like inheritance in itself is like so much, like it's amazing that you get whatever.
Well,
it's
not
your parent, but it is something.
I would,
but then
no,
it's
I have a house, but I would like a mum. Thank you very much.
Exactly. And it's the admin that comes along with that shit that's also really exhausting. And
that's
kind of what makes life a little bit harder, but I'm good.
Liar.
I don't know. I feel actually like I'm enjoying being there. Like,
no,
part
I'm
of
glad.
Me feels like
it's nice, and also it's nice to be
presence
back.
Presence is there.
It's nice to be back where we grew up in a way.
Yeah,
it's nice to be over there.
Yeah,
you go see Tabby.
I know. I've
she lives
people,
very close to you.
I've got people to see.
Yes, go see Tabs for Twinks. On that note, should we go to a break?
Let's do it.
Slay. Bye.
Slay.
Stop saying slay.
Radio. Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Are you aware of the tea alarm?
Tell me more!
Yeah, so it's this cultural phenomenon that we have in Britain. It's an alarm at 3 p.m. Where everybody in the UK has to have a cup of tea, and if you miss it by a certain number of minutes, you get fined, basically.
This ain't real.
Wait, this is not real.
This is not real. I'm not playing into this.
Yeah.
You think me watching Keeping Up Appearances, you think Mrs. Bouquet was missing a 3 o'clock tea alarm? Y'all won't get me!
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
One in five people in the UK are disabled, and it's not always visible. So if we've made ourselves at home in priority spaces on the bus or train, surrounded by our shopping bags or bikes, we could be making it harder for the people who need that space more than us. So let's not forget about the people we share our journeys with, and keep priority spaces clear for others. Remember, it's everyone's journey.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
You might then see friends, family that require a little bit of support, financial advice. How do you go about sharing that advice, sharing that support without being condescending?
A practical tip that everyone can do that is low friction, send them financial content that you like. If you have a favorite content creator, if you see an article that you like, send them the video and just ask them, what do you think? And then that can begin a conversation around it.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Let's go back to the beginning. A mortgage advisor. What does a mortgage advisor do?
So, the main purpose of a mortgage advisor is to help you to achieve the best possible mortgage solution on time and first time. Typically, in the modern day, it's somebody who's going to hold your hand through the full home buying process, liaising with solicitors, estate agents, helping with insurance, and yeah, being in your corner on your team to make sure you achieve that goal.
Business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
And we are back in the studio, and on Zoom today we have Megan, Royden, Jarvis. Hi, can you hear us? Oh, have you popped it up? We can't hear you,
Megan, but that's fine.
We can hear you, but we're going to hear you soon.
Yeah.
Yay! I sang a little song. And always well.
I loved your song. Thank you so much for having me. And sorry for the technical.
No, absolutely not. It's complicated stuff. I don't know what's going on half the time. Becky's in charge of the buttons. I do nothing.
For some reason.
How have we found you today? Are you doing well?
Yes. Yeah. It's a holiday over here. So I have three teenagers and they're home. So that always adds a level of, you know, chaos, which is exciting.
Are you celebrating Rosh Hashanah?
We are.
So Shana Tova. Shana Tova, sister.
Exactly.
Yay.
This is the happy holiday. Yes, we don't even have to atone for anything.
No, we don't have to do anything.
We're not Jewish, but we celebrate all of the holidays.
Wait,
here.
You're not Jewish, but you celebrate the holiday?
Shockingly, we celebrate the holiday, meaning we get it off from school.
Oh,
which is
fun.
Remarkable. Yeah. So,
okay.
So
well, that kind
of
works.
It's remarkable here in the U.S., but in Montgomery County, where I live just outside of Washington, D.C., they get the day off for the Jewish holidays.
Wow, fun.
I know.
Okay, well, happy Shana Tova.
Thank you.
Happy Rosh Hashanah. Anyway, sorry, little Jewish interlude. We are going back to normal programming.
Circle back to grief.
Megan, you are a trauma-trained psychotherapist and grief educator and author. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how you came to be on this show with us and talking about grief and the beginning of your story?
Sure. So, I mean, it goes way back. When I was a kid, someone who was considered like a cousin to my family drowned when I was nine and my family was on the beach. Mm. And kids just roll with it, you know? So it was like a sad event. It was really terrible.
And then we did what we did way back then, which was we didn't really talk about it anymore. And so as I grew up in life, I had what lots of kids who go through significant events but don't know how to process them, a lot of like, oh, I'm just not like other kids. So by the time I got into my like late teens and 20s, where you're all, you know, you're all shame for things, you know, you hate your body and you hate yourself and you just wish you were something other. By the time I was like in my early 20s, I went and saw a therapist and was like, it's obvious that I am really dysfunctional. It was largely because I was going through a breakup and I was just taking it really hard. Other people seem to bounce back from this nonsense faster than me. And I walked into this office and the woman said to me, well, I mean, first of all, I just cried and cried about how I was never, life was never going to be good again because, you know, this lost love. And we get to the end of the session and she says, just out of curiosity, did anything bad ever happen in your childhood? And so two things happened. One was I utterly denied that anything bad had ever happened in my childhood, and I believed it when I said it. And two, I was like, wow, this lady was not even listening. She's asking me the wrong question. And then I walked home to where I lived, which is like a long distance. And on the walk home, I was like, well, wait, I mean, Chris died when I was 9. I wonder if that's what you mean. So I had fired her in my head already. And then I was like, well, I'll just go back and ask if that's what she means. And I went back and she was like, yeah, no, I knew that something had happened. And I was like, what does that mean? And then she unfolded over the course of many years. I was in therapy for a long time, partly to help my own functioning and understanding of like why my central nervous system was such a wreck, why I was so sensitive, why I was always like predicting doom and gloom. And nobody else around me seemed to do those things. She was like, oh yeah, no, that is the hallmark of kids who've lived with profound unprocessed loss. Oh no, that's an indication of childhood trauma. So it made me feel really like less terrible, even though what she was saying was you've been carrying around these terrible things for a long time, and more hopeful. And so then I trained to become a therapist because I had fallen out of love with this breakup, but fell in love with therapy. And it was just magic. It was total magic. It taught me a lot of ways to be. And I thought, I have figured this out. I now know all the things. So if anything bad ever happens again, I have like a lifelong life preserver around me and I won't ever have to feel bad again.
And I'll never have to go to therapy ever again.
Shockingly. So then my dad died in 2017 of cancer, which was very sad and very hard. But sad and hard in the way that, you know, they sort of make it look like in the movies. Like it was, it took up space in my life and it was challenging, but I didn't like fall off the horse of my life on account of it. Mm. 2 years later, when I was on vacation with her, my mom died suddenly in her sleep unexpectedly. And was just the absolute opposite experience. It was like the center tent of the circus just falling and like everything, you know, it all goes down. And again, two things sort of happened. One was I got really sick. I got physically sick in my body from both that grief and probably some of the splinters of unprocessed grief that I had been carrying. It's not like I only had those two losses in my life. But also I got super furious because my grief showed up a lot as anger. And people often think grief is like crying, but grief can be lots of things.
Yes.
And mine was anger. And I was like, why in the world do we not tell the truth about what profound loss can really be? You know, I couldn't remember things. I was throwing my back out. And so as a clinician, and I'm trained as a trauma therapist, so I know how to help people when these things happen. I just didn't know what it felt like to be in a body when it was happening. So when I actually checked myself into an inpatient treatment, and I know, which is the thing I'm the most proud of in my entire life.
That's really amazing. That really is very cool, because I think that's a really scary thing to do, but that is
petrified. I mean, the book over my shoulder, The End of the Hour, I wrote a memoir about it, and I'm pretty descriptive about, you know, getting on the plane and just not being convinced I was going to make it there. But then I was on the receiving end of all of those treatments that I do with other people. And when I came out, I was like, we can do better. We can do better. And so there are folks that say you can't teach in grief and loss because it's too personal. But you absolutely can if you teach it the way we teach it on my team, which is like a health class. Okay. We teach what happens to the body and the mind when you go through profound loss. It's as much physical as the classes that we teach on puberty or the classes that we teach on pregnancy or on sex or on nutrition or on exercise. And so that is my little soapbox that I stand on. So I've written the other book that's over there is the clinical book, Can Anyone Tell Me? Which has every question in there, which is like, can anyone tell me why I can't remember anything? To can anyone tell me why I think that butterfly is my mom? You know, it's just everything that everybody talks about as being hard and grief and loss. And then we teach this curriculum called the Grief Mentor Method, which is just, you know, we go through the six areas that people typically struggle with. We teach them sort of here are the ways that can be helpful. You have to pick your own way. So the Grief Mentor Method is six core components to creating a personalized grief practice, which for me might look like swimming and, you know, art. And for you might look like breaking plates and starting a foundation.
Well, like grief isn't pretty. And you raise really good point there that it is physical as well as, you know, I'm sorry that you've lost this person, but for sure. The anger is well, for me anyway, only recently I'm starting to feel and understand is anger. So are you going through all the kind of emotions that like children and adults can experience then through grief in your book?
Yeah. So, I mean, this book is really geared towards adults, but in some ways kids are so much simpler because part of what kids are doing is they're trying to process something that they know they don't understand. Mm-hmm. And adults don't understand it any better, right? Like most of us, when I lost my mom, I was like, God, do I think she went to heaven? Like, I got to sit down and think about this. Like, what is quantum physics? You know, the energy that gets recycled, like, is she in the wind? I mean, kids are great with magic. They're good with. So some of what we're looking at with kids is just having a discussion so that they can land on something that works for them. And we have that in the Grief Mentor Method. We have translation. How do you tell yourself the story of what happened? How do you position, you know? And for me, for a long time, there was just a lot of anger. You know, I was angry that other people seemed to be able to live normal lives. I hated that.
Yeah, that's I mean, we've talked about that so much. Like the concept, I'm like, I literally say to my therapist all the time, I'm like, it just seems like everyone else is just waddling around, like everyone's fine. And I'm like really struggling and I don't understand why. And she's like, because your mum died, you silly, you know, goose.
But that's so real because like, you know, I always think of it as a track, like we're all kind of running laps on a track and you don't know what lap somebody else is on. Mm. But I had these moments. One was I was sitting on my porch and I was watching the UPS guy, the delivery guy dropping packages at people's houses. And I'm like, look at them just getting toilet paper. They're normal house.
Yeah.
And I really had this kind of like rage at this lovely guy named Aaron who drops our Amazon packages off.
Poor Aaron.
Because he just was the epitome of normal to me. And then I would occasionally like take the train or the bus and I'd look around and I'd be like, I bet you all just have, you know, you just go to work and eat your yogurt.
And you're satisfied.
Don't mind the bathroom. But in reality, you know, there's 8 billion people on the planet. Every single one of them is going to hit this lap at some point in their life. It's not going to be the same. And it's not that there isn't some that is blindingly more difficult than others for people. But everybody will come to understand. Everybody will hit that moment where you have to learn to live without something you know you can't live without. And for me, that really was my mom. For many people. And that was also shocking. I didn't know I was going to feel that way. I was close to my mom, but it's not like I called her and said, I need your advice in order to make my life decisions. Like I loved her, but boy, I was really taken out at the knees at just how many things, how she was a North Star and how I oriented so many of the choices that I just passively and, you know, intentionally made, particularly since my dad had died, because I was also kind of checking in on her. But that anger is real. And with kids, it can be they're throwing trucks and they're not saying I'm throwing trucks because my brother died. They're just throwing their little trucks. And so you do have to support them by saying, oh, you have so much energy in your body right now. It's been collecting. And sometimes, you know, sadness feels like madness. And there are such great kids' books out there. I actually find, because I have a degree in developmental, in child development, so I've worked with little kids. I actually find adults are the ones who have no idea. Yeah. You know, they'll not have slept in 18 months or they'll have, you know, diarrhea for 18 months. They'll have seen a gastroenterologist. Yep. They'll have gone to see some sort of specialist for migraines. They'll end up in my office and I will ask the not so brilliant question, what happened 18 months ago? And literally what they will say, particularly men, will like, well, my dad died, but that doesn't have anything to do with it.
This is all physical. It's nothing to do with my dad dying. Yeah, that's
and
got nothing
what
to do with
me. Said, you know, I had a CEO one time say to me, like, I don't really believe in that mind-body nonsense. And I was like,
okay.
Sure. Okay. I was like, do you believe in, I mean, I literally said, because I can be a little spicy, I was like, do you believe in gravity? Like, it's not an unproven thing. We have a nerve, the vagus nerve actually connects our brain to our bodies. What do you mean? You don't believe in the vagus nerve? Like, what are you saying?
It's just wild, isn't it? I do find it because I'm going to say it. I have a 60, how old is daddy? 68-year-old, I think he's 68.
I don't know, how old is it?
68-year-old father who has like really struggled with me going to therapy and finding it really confusing, but then also being very aware that it's helpful, but also like really just like, but I don't understand it and you shouldn't do it, but. Because it somehow means that I'm wrong or somehow means that it's like it's wrong or something. And I said to him when I first went back to therapy, like properly, he said to me, why are you doing it? You're not sad properly anymore. Like you're OK. And I said, yeah, but it's the same for me as I think about it. Like you go to the gym for your body. You go to the gym for your mind. If you think about it like that, then he was, and then he kind of looked at me and was like, I could tell that he agreed. He understood what I was saying.
No.
I could tell he completely understood what I was saying, but he was really not. He was like, well, fine. And like just walked away. And I was like, but yeah, no, I find it really, really fascinating. And I deal with a lot of physical symptoms that I think are a lot to do with stress and a lot to do with having been in like a severe traumatic response since I was a child that have now kind of like popped up, especially since I think once you stop uni and once you stop school and you suddenly are just given this like beat to stop.
Yeah,
it all pops up at the age of 22 when all of a sudden you're like, oh, I have an adult life and I'm not like shackled to a schedule. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how we store things so physically in the body, why that happens, and also how can we, I mean, obviously it's not a simple question, but how can we start to get out of those scenarios? Because I know for me, chronic pain is something I deal with a lot. And it's one of those things where, and like physically, my acid reflux stuff. Like I just, anytime I get stressed, I just puke for a day. And
yeah, like, I think that to echo on that, like how, have you seen any, like a trend in any of these symptoms that people are experiencing through grief as well?
You know, so what I see, I actually put this up on my Instagram the other day because I have one of those kind of ADD minds that all of a sudden has to take a big piece of paper and put all my ideas down. What I have been seeing lately is a crossover in symptoms. So people who have ADD when they're grieving are talking about the same symptoms that some women in menopause are talking about. And people who are in menopause, the symptoms for menopause are identical to the symptoms for grief, except in grief, you don't typically have hot flashes. The way in which you see ADHD get worse or maybe quiet when someone is going through a traumatic event is very curious. So when you do a assessment for trauma and an assessment for ADD or something like any kind of neurodiversity, boy, oh boy, you can end up diagnosing yourself with sort of several of these things. And to me, I sort of feel like this is world religion. Like we're all talking about the same God under, you know, using a different book, meaning we grieve with our bodies. We're neurodiverse with our bodies. Menopause, we experience that in our bodies. And we have 12 physical systems in our body. So our digestive tract is one. Our respiratory tract is another. Our reproductive tract. My favorite, which people don't remember, is the integumentary, which is your skin, nails, and your hair. Mm. You know, so we have these 12 systems that nobody remembers because we learned about them in grade 8. But each one of those systems can be the place that you're, and you said it just a second ago, stress. So I hate the word stress because stress, oh no, you're fine to use it, but you used it in terms of grief. But most people say, well, I'm really stressed out. And that kind of sounds like they have a deadline at work.
Yes.
But if they said, my dad died 10 weeks ago, it sounds totally different. And we have a totally different understanding. If you're stressed out, I might say, oh, you might need to go for a run. If you say, my dad died 10 weeks ago, I might say, let's get a coffee. Mm. Right? And so the 12 systems of the body each have ways of dysfunctioning. And so I do see patterns. And sometimes the patterns are people's ADD is the thing that is the most agitated in their grief experience. Or they're having physical symptoms like sleeplessness or memory loss. Memory loss is a big one. Mm. Brain fog.
None of these have come back. So this is so fascinating. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When you said about the menopause, I was like, oh my gosh, I keep saying that. I'm like, I feel like I'm going through menopause, like brain fog and memory loss. And
you have had your brain foggy stuff.
I'm going to have an ADHD diagnosis.
Are you looking for one?
But I'm at the moment trying to work out if it's to do with trauma or is it ADHD, or like when did this start? So this is so interesting.
So here's the thing that I will say, because I really believe this, because what I keep doing is getting trained in each one of these things.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, well, now I need to learn about this. And now I need to learn about that. So I'm in menopause, unlike you two lovelies. And so I was very incentivized to learn more about it. Here's how to think about it. The primary system that is getting disrupted is your endocrine system.
Yeah.
Your endocrine system is where your pituitary gland and your thyroid are.
Yep.
Those are responsible for your hormones.
Yep.
And your hormones, people may not know this, but your neurotransmitters are how your brain cells communicate with each other through the synapses at the end.
Yep.
Hormones, same thing. They're sending messages all through the body, but they're doing it through the blood. So there are some neurotransmitters and some hormones that are actually, there's some that are the same and some that are different. But when, let's say in menopause, your estrogen just drops out. It's not there anymore. The hormonal conversation inside your body gets all screwed up.
Mm.
And it kind of can only get screwed up a certain few ways. So whether the hormonal disruption is because of menopause, whether it's because of something agitating your neurodiversity, which, by the way, there's no such thing as neuronormal. Mm. Not really. It's just to what degree are you neurodiverse? Mm. And a lot of women in menopause are discovering that their ADHD symptoms are so much higher because the estrogen is what drives dopamine production. And dopamine production is what makes you feel just kind of like, okay. So estrogen gets interrupted in menopause. In trauma, what gets the dopamine still gets interrupted, but it gets interrupted in a different way. So the endocrine system for folks is taking a hit, and we don't know how to get it back settled. We don't know how to say, how do we get it back into regulation? So have all the tests done, because, you know, for me as a grief specialist, there are a lot of women in their 50s whose parents are dying. And so, and they're in menopause and they're grieving. And if they go to a menopause doctor, which we have a big movement over here, so we're getting educated, they'll get HRT, they'll get specialized hormones. And that's only going to take them so far. They may suddenly be sleeping, but they may not, because the disruption in their sleep might be about grief. And so when you asked about the energy, that's just how I describe it. Grief is the energy that's created in your system on account of loss. It could be on account of loss because someone died, but it could be because you just finished university. Mm. And oh my God, the existential change. But there's loss in any kind of change. And that, you're going to see the loss inside your body. So when my mom died, I just basically stopped eating. Mm. That didn't mean I lost a lot of weight, by the way.
Yeah.
But it did mean that my digestive tract kind of shut down.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm 6 years out after my mom's death, and I'm still working on getting it back to sort of normal hunger cues and normal responses. Because what happens is the body goes into these fight, flight, and freeze responses because it feels like it's under threat. I mean, death is literally the biggest threat that it is trying to avoid.
Now, how does PTSD come into this?
Keep asking.
No, I'm just intrigued in terms of the difference between like trauma and PTSD.
Ooh, yeah,
and
are
they
linked? That's a good question.
Yeah, so good. So the definition of trauma, as I use it as a trauma therapist, is something bad that happened. That's it. So COVID was a trauma for the entire globe, right?
For sure.
But that's different than traumatized. You know people who were not, who they did not have any trouble. In fact, they lived their best lives during COVID.
Yeah.
So a trauma doesn't always traumatize someone. Right? And that's actually a hopeful thing to say, because particularly for children, bad things can happen. But if they get the right amount of support in the right way at the right time, it won't land inside their system and then begin to make meaning inside their system about what the rest of their life looks like. As a child who experienced a child's death, I took no risks as a child. If I did not already know that I could do it, I didn't even try it.
Mm-hmm.
And now if I haven't failed at 6 things a week as a 51-year-old woman, I am not living life. But so PTSD is, I'm just going to sort of in a nutshell describe it as this. Just as you just said, when you get out of your scheduled environment and there's a pause, the body does sort of ratchet down. It does take a moment and look around. And sometimes it says, oh, I'm fine. I don't have a paper I have to write. I don't have a bus I have to catch. And then it says, oh, my goodness, this would be an effective time to process out all of the feelings that I haven't had time or haven't been safe enough to process.
Mm.
And so when we first saw a PTSD diagnosis, that was with veterans, and they were experiencing the emotional state of being on a battlefield, having been off the battlefield and home in their own living room for a year. So a year after these terrible events that nearly made them die, suddenly they're feeling all the fear that they didn't feel in that moment. And that's really adaptive, because if a bear runs into my office right now, it's not great for me to start to collapse, really have my emotional experience. We need me to run.
Yeah.
So that fight flight response is active. And if I'm able to get away from the bear, I'm less likely to be traumatized. The tricky thing is the other system is freeze. Mm. And if I can't fight and I can't flee, I will go into freeze, and in freeze, I have no defenses. The energy gets into my system.
Mm.
And when we're talking about something like a death, there's nothing to fight against and there's nothing to flee.
Mm.
So we are more prone, more likely to have that energy land inside of us. And listen, this is just the truth. No one has ever taken a class on grief and loss. They don't exist.
Mm.
And so all people think grieving is crying.
Mm.
And so we have this terrible thing happen. We cry a couple of times. People are like, aren't you feeling better yet? And then our boss says, you've had your 3 days off. You need to come back to work. And that energy stays inside us.
Mm.
And PTSD is when whatever the terror was, right? So for me, that was the moment my husband told me my mom died. Something about that five senses experience. For me, I was standing in a parking lot. It was kind of a rainy day. There were cars driving by. There was like kind of a trash smell. PTSD is something pokes me and I am pulled back into that moment, and I can't distinguish the difference of that is in the past from my present moment experience. So I am reliving with my five senses that terrible moment right now, and my body thinks it's happening again. That really is the definition of PTSD.
Mm.
And so we use these tools to remind you it's not happening.
Mm.
It's not happening right now. We just need to move that terror through the body. And often with PTSD, what we try to do is offer the supports that you needed in that moment, even though you couldn't have them, because the body doesn't know the difference between it happening then and it happening now. So it also doesn't know the difference between you not getting support then and you getting support now. That's the real hopeful piece.
I have to wrap up in a second, but my just final question to that is that PTSD in a therapy session, for example, then can be very, perhaps very useful to be able to process that in the correct way. And then I guess that release of energy rather than not being able to kind of, I don't know,
like prolong,
and like actually process what's happened.
Yes. So PTSD in some ways is a very present trigger because you get so dysregulated and you feel so afraid and there's so much panic, you don't miss it. Whereas when you just have a headache or you're not sleeping or you can't get off your phone and you tell your therapist, my dad died 18 months ago, but I don't think that has anything to do with it, you can miss it. But PTSD in my, from my perspective, is just an immediate thing that we can attend to with all of these body-centered treatments. Can I say one thing about this, which is that grief in general doesn't require therapy. I mean this really sincerely.
Yeah.
A therapist is a trained specialist. And in the US, we don't have that many that are trained in grief and loss. But I'm trained in all kinds of sort of like ninja tools to help you with your high level of dysfunctioning. I had traumatized grief, and the people that I work with usually have traumatized grief, meaning they're not able to do their normal life most of the time because that's how bad they are physically feeling inside their body. Most grief, we could actually like teach a class in our synagogue or teach a class at work, teach and just get generally better educated about how to move the energy through the body. And then we're just a grief-informed culture rather than doing what we don't want to do, which is sort of pathologize it. And and like your dad had, which is like, oh, why do you need to go to therapy? You know, we need to go to therapy because there's nowhere else to learn how to grieve because we don't have the, we don't have access to that level of education.
Oh, Megan, thank you so much. This has been such a fab talk. I have really enjoyed this one.
Becky. Really fresh perspective and I think also really positive, you know, like some of these words that trigger words like PTSD and grief
they sound
and trauma
really scary.
Sound, terrifying, but it's great that we can kind of reframe that. So,
do you want to just tell us where we can find you online?
Yeah, so I'm pretty active on Instagram. So it's just my name, Megan Reardon Jarvis. I also host a book festival in LA. This year it's on November 21st. It's called the Grieftastic Book Festival. So you can look up Grieftastic if you, my name is too hard to spell.
Fun.
I have a podcast called Grief is My Side Hustle. You can come listen to me and my guests there. And I have a website. So, and those two books. So you can, everything we talked about today, you guys would love Can Anyone Tell Me? Because
I'm very excited.
It's all in there. I put it all down.
We're going to be all over those. Megan, thank you so much.
We have to go to a break. But have a great day.
Bye.
See you after
the break. Everybody.
Bye-bye.
FUBAR Radio.
What the Health with Georges Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
Up now is Ephraim Mason-Clark, professional footballer. You got the chance to work under Frank Lampard. Just tell me a little bit about him.
The first day he came in, it was just like, the word isn't starstruck, but it's just like, this is a legend in not just English football, but football in the whole world. So at the start, it was more of like, wow. And then it's like, you just switch off from being a fan to, this is like the gaffer now.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google app stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back, and we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
If you drink a little, then drive, you risk losing your license. You risk every day becoming more complicated.
How am I supposed to get to training, Dad? How am I supposed to...
You risk losing your job.
I'm going to have to let you go.
You risk your family not looking at you the same way.
I can't believe you did that. I can't
You risk injuring someone.
Hello, I need an ambulance.
You risk being seen as a drink driver. Drink a little, risk a lot. Think.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
We are joined by Miss Safia. If I could produce you a salt, what is he like on paper? Sound like we're on Love Island.
Okay, on paper, my type has to have a good soul, good purpose and calm energy. I'm in my energy era where you've just got to come in and make me happy. I don't need you for anything. I wanna find happiness and I need him to be kind.
What the Health with George Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
I'm joined by Alex Mitten, retreat host and mentor.
I think a lot of people are lonely, surrounded by people at the minute. Like, you know, especially living in London, there's fucking people everywhere. But we sort of live these quite strange lives now where we're quite closed down emotionally, you know, even just like with our voice. We don't really speak that often sometimes, do you know what I mean?
Business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Just doing a quick grief photo.
Yeah, we were taking selfies in our studio because we're so clever.
Because we're so clever.
And we were just recounting my fantastic memory because I don't have brain fog because my mum died when I was 7. We were talking about how...
Primary school.
Yeah, we were talking about how Becky's drinking San Pellegrino and Mrs. Morsellen when we were in year 5. Shout out Mrs. Morsellen. Queen. She used to drink San Pellegrino and she used to fill it up, but she used to fill it up at the tap and then put it in this little terracotta pot. And I said to Becky, do you remember that she read us The Firework Maker's Daughter by Philip Pullman? And Becky said no, and I said yeah, and then Becky was like,
I was like, yeah, you fucking don't have brain
fog. because can I tell you something? That was the best parts of my childhood. Everything else was fucking awful. So Mrs. Morsellen reading us The Firework Maker's Daughter was like the highlight of my life. Like my whole year was like made.
But do you know what? That's also great. Like you know, the conversation we've just had is about if we're grieving, then we need to be supported at the same time. And that was the support. And that probably means that your grief is better now because of her.
Probably. Love you, Mrs. Morsellen. Mrs. MT, that's what we used to call her. What a queen. Love her. She's probably 105 now. I think she's going to hate me for saying that. Is she ever fine?
I don't know if she ever listens to this.
Well, maybe we should send it to her. Love you. She used to always say, never rely on technology. And I don't.
Key takeaway from today's conversation. I'm intrigued to know what you thought. Anything you learned?
You go first. I want to contemplate a thought here.
I think I was reminded of how much grief is stored in your body.
Yep.
I know we talked about it lots before, but I think I kind of forget that, and the fact that there's different ways that it can show up physically, and I think that's really important to remember. And it just makes you think that all of these physical symptoms that we have are not necessary, that, you know, we can't find a diagnosis for.
Yeah.
Could definitely be a result of grief. And I think that's really fascinating. And I would love to kind of read more about that kind of work out why that is and if there's any
specific because it's very interesting
symptoms.
That you're reaching for an ADHD diagnosis when perhaps it's something like grief. It's a set of similar symptoms. I think that's really interesting.
And this is something that...
And it's something I wouldn't have diagnosed you with as a kid.
No.
For sure. Whereas me, they would have been like, that kid's fucking nuts. Yeah. She's got the ADHD. And they did.
Yeah. No, exactly. But I mean, I know a few people who work in that space.
Yeah, for sure.
And like, apparently mine shows up, if I do have it, as more of like a boy's kind of ADHD.
Symptomatic. Interesting.
Thing. But I don't know. And the thing is like, you know, it's so difficult to diagnose. Like she said, like no one is kind of like neurotypically normal, she said.
But I think it's,
you know, that's also what makes us have our personality. And 100%. I think that's the same with grief, that, you know, like, yes, that shit's happened to us, but that's also shaped us as to who we are today.
I have contemplated my thought.
What? Go.
I really liked the conversation that we had about how grief can be something that we can deal with. And then there's like traumatized grief and trauma and being traumatized and PTSD and how they're all very different and they're separate. And how, because I always think as well, I think there is that tendency when you've had a lot of grief to say something bad happens, like you have a breakup or something, and you go, well, here we go again, motherfucker, strap in, we gotta go. Like, do you know what I'm saying? And actually, is it? is it trauma? Are we being traumatized again? Mm. Are we having very visceral reactions, or are we just, are we having a grief moment where we need to just live with this in a bit more of a mundane way rather than like a way that we're harking back to the trauma that we've already experienced?
And also, that's great. Like, brilliant if we're not all traumatized.
Yeah. Let's not be traumatized. Like, no one needs to be traumatized.
Isn't that brilliant that we can have trauma and not be traumatized?
Oh my God. I mean,
not all trauma is bad.
The dream.
I think this was quite inspiring and insightful, and I feel quite positive about it.
I'm glad. Do you think you're going to have a good week? I think you're going to have a great week.
I think I'm going to have a good week. I think it's made me realize that I need to have some time to pause.
Yeah. Everybody, take a minute.
A minute. That's what my week is going to be looking like.
Yeah, incredible. And we have 10 seconds left. What do you want to say to our people?
I want to say, you know, have a shit week, have a good week. Whatever happens, we're going to see you next week.
Yeah, God bless. We all love you so much. And feel your grief, guys. Goodbye.
Bye.